Good day, modern Suffolk Ram.
Scasius.
Welcome to episode 216 of the Randers podcast with me, the Suffolk Ram.
And that guy, Scasius. It's 2016! So you're going to say 2016? Fuck, we've been gone for a while, haven't we?
Mate, 2016, such a simpler time.
Yeah. I think. Was it?
Yeah, it's pre-Trump.
Was it?
Well, yeah, he got elected in 2016, didn't he? So at this moment in time...
Oh, did he?
Yeah. At this moment in time, I think we're in bliss at this moment in time. I don't think he's been elected yet.
I just want to throw out there, mate, this is why you're Ram, innit? It's got nothing to do with actual Rams. It's Ram as in memory, because fucked if I knew.
Yeah. Yeah. My issue... Yeah, but the trouble is, as soon as I fall asleep, I forget it all. The trouble is... With no one Trump was elected. I know it was 2020, I know it was 2016, but cause Americans' elections seem to take about 2 years. You know, rather, I mean, us, it's about 4 weeks. From being declared to someone in power, it's about 4 weeks. Americans, they go for about 2 years of actually like campaigning, then about 6 months of voting, and then the guy wins, and it's about another 3 months before everything actually happens. It's.
Well, yeah. We have to do it quickly, though, because, I mean, fuck, if we wait more than 2 weeks, their asses are out on the curb.
So,
how long have you been in office for? About 2 weeks. I'll give you another 7 days. Get out. Here's your eviction notice.
Yeah. I'd say there was a statement from one of the sort of propaganda statements from one of the... Russian sort of like military defense people, like he's like caused Britain their eternal enemy. I thought it was the States, but apparently it's us.
Fantastic.
But he said something on the lines of like we've been joined sort of the comedy of the last three prime ministers. Thought actually, I can't disagree with you on that.
Enjoying the comedy. Yeah, so have we.
Yeah. So it's like, do you know?
Is he including Rishi in this one?
Well, wouldn't you?
How could he make Rishi a joke? What a name! Just go and buy his name.
Yeah, easy. Just Rishi cakes. Yeah. There you go, sword. Yeah,
hanging out with my boy Rishi. I don't have him on speed dial.
Or would you want him to? Would you really want him?
Well, let's be fair, mate. I don't really know if it's worth it anymore because, like I said, I'd have to keep changing the number in my phone every 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there goes another PM.
He surprised me. He's there.
Yeah,
he's there.
Yeah, but let's be honest. They've sort of like they've got station. I was like, well, if we get rid of him, who else do we put in his place? I don't know. Where's the cat?
Oh no, the cat legged it.
No, I think someone evicted the cat, was it? It's because their one of the PM's wife was allergic to cats.
Not my problem. Suck it up.
Well,
you're British.
No, exactly. That's what I thought. It's like, well, you just have to like not be PM then. You know, if your wife can't handle Barry the cat, you can't.
Yeah, that's the groove, mate. I agree with you. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll put Rishi on speed dial. I'll call him up and I'll say,
shall we get
mate,
him to the podcast?
Yeah, mate. I'll just say, look, dude, where the cat?
Yeah,
and he'll be like, "Well, the cat's gone." I was like, "Are you allergic to a cat?" And he's like, "No." I was like, "Then fucking get him back in that house, boy."
Yeah. Head bouncer. Yeah, let's get him on the podcast.
No wonder everything's gone downhill if the cat's gone.
Yeah, it's all. It's,
who the fuck did you all think was pulling the strings?
It's like the crows in the Tower of London. You know, the crows
when they're gone,
Tower of London collapses. Apparently. Because apparently the crows are in charge of structural integrity of the Tower of London. They go out
sounds about right.
But they're all hard hats on, their high-vis jackets on.
Low-bearing crows, mate.
You've had the cowboys in here.
Don't move that crow. Why? Don't.
The crows still on top, flapping their wings, saying, we could just go and put a beam in, couldn't we? Or we could keep flapping our wings. We're invaluable if we flap the rings.
Ravens of D say, keep them fucking things there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's a high-tension crow suspension system.
That's it. Well, you can't be trusting anything like, I don't know, girders, witchcraft.
Yeah. And they tried pigeons. It didn't go well. So, yeah, you're stuck with the crows. My sister's got issues with crows. They've started congregating at our field. And like take it to dismantling some of the equipment by like ripping bits off them. off the equipment.
As they do.
Yeah. But it's gotten slightly more disturbing now, because now she goes up there and she keeps finding bones left behind. And the other day
they're trading then.
They did. And the other day she went up there, there was a big sharp glass left on one of the top of the dog walk. I said, it's getting threatening now, isn't it, really? They're starting to leave sharpened objects behind.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting very wet in a state here, mate.
Yeah. I've told her she needs to make friends with the crows. Because if you make friends with them, and we all make friends with the crows, then if anyone does decide to sort of like try and steal your equipment, the crows will kill them.
It's about right. Is that like the nature's craze?
Yeah, pretty much. You make friends with the crows, you know, you come friends with crows, then you're then you're good, really, for life.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Or you get shanked when you go down to the field.
No, I think crows...
Because you didn't take the threat seriously.
No, crows are cool. Crows are all right. They're okay. I still wonder if you're a crow and a raven is. It's just raven is a cooler name for a crow.
Well, they're both big. Hang on. They're both black.
I'm good.
They both fly.
Tappy tap sign.
Were they more blue? I don't know.
We haven't done much live research on the podcast recently, so let's do some live research on the
podcast.
Ravens versus crows. Oh, it's literally before. I just put verse in, it came the exact same option.
Are they blue or black?
What's the difference between a crow and a raven? Ravens have bigger, curvier beaks versus crows, while both species have bristles at the base of their beak. Ravens are noticeably longer. Its throat feathers are also quite shaggy. Common crows are much less common than American crows in the United States. Let's see what crows UK. The raven's a diamond-shaped tail where a crow tail is round. Well, there's pictures. Oh, there's pictures. I see. Yeah, I see.
The more you know.
I've got a link to B. We see his autumn watch. And yeah, you can see the difference. It's actually quite a distinctive difference, actually, when you see it, when you see them next to each other. Yes. Oh, there you go. Then we start bringing wooks into the scenario, and we're not going to get down the area of wooks. We won't know where that far. But yeah, but if anyone's interested, there'll be a link in the show notes to a raven versus crow.
Yes.
Somebody might be interested.
And they'll be like, ain't this a gaming podcast? It's like, well, not really. It is Rand Nerds for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Look. Let's be honest. If anyone complains the Advertising Standards Authority or brings up to trading standards, we are fucked.
What do we advertise ourselves as?
I think we advertise as a gaming channel and podcast.
No, you might have to change that, son.
Yeah.
Might have to change that, because I don't even think we started as a gaming podcast. I mean, we had a weird news section.
We did. We discussed games, though. We discussed Dishonored 2, the expansion, which was called...
that game?
It was Dishonored. Well, it was Dishonored 1 expansion, I think, we discussed.
With that guy?
Yeah. So, we discussed that. I can't remember. You discussed Hyperdimension 2 now, I'm pretty sure, because you discussed that nearly every other podcast. So.
I was going to say that's every episode. What are you on about?
Yeah, exactly. You can't use that as a narrowing things down. It's like, oh, mate, I listened to your podcast today. Oh, right, which one? The one with Scouts talks about Hyperdimension Neptunia. That doesn't help.
And they'll be like, well, that's like nearly every episode of the Rand Nerds podcast. Yeah. And every daily vlog and every live stream for the last 10 years. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, it's like saying, you know, the podcast, the one where you guys had a beard. It's like, it doesn't help. It doesn't help.
That podcast you did where you guys spoke about the things at that time, on that day, and there was audio, and there might have been a stream. Yeah, keep going.
Do you know a podcast where you guys rambled on for an hour about nonsense and then spent about 10 minutes talking about a game? That one. I don't know which one that is. That doesn't help.
It's like, yeah, again, not helpful, guys.
No, you're not narrowing. There's just too much. Do you not realise how unhelpful that information is?
They are trying, okay?
They're very trying.
It's trying my patience.
So,
Can't help it. It's what we get for being on the internet, mate.
Yeah, for being our job being influencers, innit?
In it, mate. Oh, wait, sorry. In it, Gav.
Influencers. Let me show you this fantastic product I've purchased and I've not been sent at all by the company and been paid a lot of money to shill to you.
I cannot stand influencers, man. Yeah. Like, if you start calling yourself an influencer, get fucked. If you start calling your bedroom an office or a studio, like, and you haven't got a tax code.
Yeah.
Fuck off. If you are not registered as self, if you're self-employed, if you are registered self-employed and you're calling your bedroom whatever, great. If it becomes a studio and your photograph of your studio has your bed next to your desk, no.
But the bed's a prop bed. That's what I would say.
I don't know. In fairness, I take the piss, but sometimes I wish I had a bed next to my desk because there have been times I'm like, you know what? I've been sat here for the last however many hours. I've been sat here for days. I could really do with a power nap.
I used to have a bed, my bed next to my desk, and I'm so glad when my desk was no longer next to my bed. It sounds nice in theory to have your computer sat next to you. It's all well and good until Windows decides to do a random update in the middle of the night and switch itself on automatically.
Yeah.
Or you think, oh, I'm going to go to bed now, shut that Windows. Windows is now configuring updates.
Please
not turn off your PC. Oh, God, this is going to be another 4 to 5 hours.
Mate, it's even worse in my rig because my rig's all RGB, isn't it? So the whole bedroom would be like a disco.
That's why I don't have RGB anymore. You know, that's why I just couldn't put up with it anymore. That's why I got rid of all the RGB stuff.
See, I gave up because there are some parts in my machine I can't turn the RGB off without extra software.
Yeah.
And then, like, if there's ever a time when you leave the machine powered down for too long or unplugged, all of a sudden it just reverts all the settings and I'm like, oh, now I need to reinstall all the software.
But at least if you have a solid-sided case, you can't... I mean, I've been looking at sort of like... Either get a PCs. I think either do I buy one, do I build one, or do I get a pre-build? Trouble is, the pre-builds out there, they're all like covered in like big see-through panels. They've got RGB everything, and it's like, I don't want that. I just want a nice, sleek black case with a load of connection ports on the front that looks quite nice.
Have you not tried? Because they usually give you like a configuration option, don't they? So you can actually change the case.
Not a great deal. No, they're all still for some reason. Gaming PC companies think that all gamers want their PC to look like a boy racer's car.
Yeah.
And so they have to have like neon and everything. So, and yes, I did go through the phase of having RGB, and I used to put lights in my PC case. I did that when I was about 16. I don't do that anymore. I've gone from the lowered Peugeot, which can't go over speed bump, to more of a Porsche. That's what I've sort of moved on. Albeit, you know, I've moved, that's exactly what I've gone for. So I've gone something more classy.
No,
than the Peugeot of the RGB you can't, and the big sound system that your car can't power properly.
You mean the one that shakes the entire ass end of the car?
I saw somebody's driving like a crappy. I think it was a Peugeot as well. Actually, like saw a saloon type car today. It's really old, and he'd been cleaning up. And you know what? For some reason, he thought what would look really good is if came out of his back bumper. He had 6 exhausts. I'm pretty sure only one of them was connected, but it just looked. I just sort of thought,
yeah, I was going to say.
It's like. I just want to pass. Why has he got 6 bits of pipes? Like, oh, there might be 6 exhausts.
No, just turns out 6 bits of scaffolding.
Yeah, he's actually averse into 6 bits that are perfectly well. I say perfectly lined up. He clearly done it himself, so they weren't quite lined up properly. So they. I
don't know, man.
There's a certain age in your life where you'll do stuff like that, stab and go, yes, that looks amazing.
Oh, I don't know. I've always been a bit of a Jag guy myself, so, you know. My boy racer kind of thing would be, I don't know, an Aerial Atom.
Boy racer, Aerial Atom?
Well, yeah, that's as close as boy racer as I'm going to get. I love the Atom, although I don't like the supercharger whine. Well, here's the difference between me and a boy racer. I actually know how that shit works.
No, 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 no. Wait, No boy racer. By the time you get to say something, Aero Atom, you're no longer a boy racer. You've moved on from that. A boy racer.
Okay, then I'm beyond.
You've got to be. Your boy racer car's got to be a little shitty hatchback.
Nope.
With like a 1 litre engine that you've done up to make it look like it's. You think it's amazing. It's in your mind, you've made a Bugatti Veyron. But everybody else can see it's a Vauxhall Corsa with the word Corsa pulled off and painted over.
No, that's, can't be having that.
Yeah. That's the boy racer. We used to get boy racer meets in our car park at work. They used to come and it was hilarious. Watch them sort of like try and do donuts and spin around in these little shitty, you know, Corsas, Peugeot 106s, like some little, someone had thought of 4KA. What were they going to do in that? Really? You know, it's like, just you're not cool. You think you are.
No, I agree. I used to know a few back in the day. They used to meet up down on the seafront, down in Yarko, Golston.
Yes, yes. I've been to one of those meetups down at Yarmouth.
Mate, it's embarrassing. I went down there. First time I went down there, I was down there in one of my mate's cars. And that was embarrassing because they all thought they were fucking cool. And then another time, I was just riding my bike and I needed a place to stop. And there they all fucking were. And I start, like, people were like almost trying to heckle me. It's like, what do you want to do? Quarter mile drag me? I'll smoke you every fucking time, mate. Yeah. You haven't got a fucking chance.
Right. Your car, you may think your car being lowered with the sort of like sub, the big heavy sub on the back and the neon strips underneath that lights up as you go along and the furry dice and the bad Monster Energy decal on the back. You may think that's made your car faster. Believe me, it's made it a lot slower.
Like you're 0 to 60 times or what? Never?
Yeah. I tell you what, a similar thing that you would not have seen very so much is Agrix saw boy racers. Well, are a different breed. They are related, but they're different.
Mm.
And I used to see them all the time driving. When I was at, you know, Eastern College, I used to see all Agrix students all the time, you know, drive around. And their thing was, every lunchtime, you go down there and they'd all be congregated around someone's car, the bonnet would be up and they'd all just be staring at the engine. That's all they did. Didn't race them around, they'd just be out there with the engine bonnet open, staring at it. And I just want to think, what's the conversation going on there? It's like, well, it's still definitely an engine. It hasn't changed since last time you opened the bonnet. They're just standing around staring at the engine. I just didn't get it.
Like, have they done anything to it?
I don't think so.
Like, oh, mate, a stock, I've put a turbo on it.
I don't. Their cars, the thing about Agrix is their cars did not used to appear very heavily modified. Right. What they'd either have, like, a little shitty, like, car, which is clearly a bit driven across a field a dozen times, or they'd have some little, like, 4x4 type thing, which, or like a pickup or something. But again, this is the bonnet open, staring at the engine. Me and a friend of mine, he was sort of like lecturer there, isn't it? Anymore. He's all moved on. But we used to, like, as a joke, if we ever had to go pop up there, we'd go in there, we'd stop, if we were doing nothing, we'd just open our bonnet, just stand next to it, just to wind people up. It's like, oh, look, it's still an engine. Still one. Yep, definitely got an engine in it.
Oh, mate. Yeah. I will say, in fairness, in defence of not so much the boy races, you start lowering the cars, putting on body kits and stuff like that. I used to know a chap. It's when I was in my 20s, so he must have been in his 30s, going on in his 40s. May have actually been a bit older than that, thinking about it. He used to drive around in a little Escort, mm-hmm. right? But it was a sleeper. So it looked like your trashy, you know, crappy, plain as fuck Escort. And he said it used to be beautiful. He said he used to have the boy racers pull up next to him, body kit, the lot. And he said they'd fucking be revving it up. They'd be fucking taunting him, or you'd see someone come up with like their actual bought faster car. And he said he'd just fucking floor it and leave them behind. And the horror on their faces as this ganky looking fucking Escort just went fucking burning it down the fucking A47.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
My friend, I think he's got rid of it now, he had a little electric Kia. Mm-hmm. And it, from the outside, looked like grandmother's car from the outside.
Yeah.
But being electric had an awful lot of torque and had a lot of acceleration.
Oh, yeah, got it.
And there have been two or three times where I've been with him, and we pulled up, so again, sort of lights, and up comes the outside boy racer in, and I think last one was in a mini, one of the sort of new style minis, and we could see it was him with his girlfriend in the car, and we could hear him revving his engine, and we just wait for the lights, and he said, just hold on, and the lights go, and this boy racer starts to put his foot down, my friend just put his foot in the door, so we just go flying. Because it's electric, I just go flying, just leaving behind.
And the dude's nuts just literally shriveled up and receded. Yeah.
Well, I want to know, actually, I was talking to him about this. The thing is about electric cars, all electric cars that are coming out now, they've got even the slow ones have got 0-60 times of like sort of like 6-7 seconds, because mm-hmm. electric's just so fast, they're just really good at force. 10-15 years time, they're going to start, when you saw like, you know, diesel sort of cars disappearing and so forth, maybe you saw filter out, they're going to start being the boy racer cars. I said, that's going to be fucking lethal.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
I said, they're going to have to put some sort of, you know, they're going to have to, no one's thought about this, what we're going to do. What will happen is, a first generation is going to come into everybody's hands, they're going to be racing around killing each other. They're going to have to start putting limiters on them, aren't they? They're going to have to. I know in some countries there's limiters, they when you first get your license, you're limited to what size engine you can get for a few years.
Yeah, they do that with bikes over here still.
Yeah.
Depending on what license you get. So you'd be limited to like, oh, hey, you've got a 250, you can only have so many brake.
But is that license limited by a number of years, or could you in theory go, if you pass all the tests, like jump
through
the ranks?
So when I did mine, I went straight for the biggie. I don't know if you can do that anymore. You used to be able to, but I don't know. Hands up, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that a lot of my friends had to go in stages. So they went from CBT to the next level, which would let them have like a restricted 400. And then they could either take the restrictor off and then take another test to get the next size up, or they could wait XYZ number of years or whatever, because they just weren't trusted with that kind of power.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of people I know went straight to like, oh, mate, I'm going to buy myself because let's be fair. If someone has just passed the test, and I took the test where I could just get on anything, right? Mm. So I took my test on a 500cc Kawasaki ER5, right? Not a particularly fast bike. It'll top out at like 110, maybe 120, yeah? With that license, I could have gone out and bought a fucking 200-mile-an-hour Hayabusa twin turbo, right? The fact that anyone could just go and do that?
Yeah. That's how car tests have been and still are. You know, if you pass your car test, there's nothing stopping you buying a Ferrari. Technically, yes, your insurance being astronomical, but there's nothing stopping you.
That's terrifying to me.
In other countries, I think it's in Italy. I think is when you pass your test. For the first like 3 years, you can't have a car with an engine bigger than a 1 litre.
I'm fair that.
And that's a fixed time. I don't think you can like bypass it, I believe. Which is why you start seeing a spate of really powerful small engine cars coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically to bypass that little ruling.
Oh, sure.
But I do think there'll have to be some sort of like restriction placed. Because otherwise you just have people killing themselves left, right, and centre.
For sure. I mean, well, yeah, because they ain't going to know how to handle that power. I mean, recently I've been in racing sims a lot. And I'll say now, like, when I fucking floor it, and I often floor, like, I'm often got the sim car pinned. Jesus fucking Christ, man. Those things get squirrely really quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the idea of a bunch of people who have no idea how to drive and all that, like, no idea how to counter steer and all that, that's terrifying. Although I have, my friend and I got into a bit of a discussion recently. I don't know, we've gone off in a bit of a tangent, but we were talking about how we are so heavily reliant these days on assists. So traction control, power steering, ABS, all that kind of stuff. There are going to be entire generations of, there are entire generations of kids who ain't going to know what the fuck to do when that shit fails, or if that shit fails.
Mm.
I find that kind of scary. We have so much faith in modern technology, we don't even consider what's going to happen if it goes wrong.
I mean, that's true even of like when I passed my tests, you know, when I passed my test, parasitic was a thing. Whereas, yeah, you know, sure. 20, well, it wasn't necessarily a cane thing. And there's lots of little incremental things that we got used to having that weren't there. But when I got my Defender, which had power steering, but that taught, I learned a lot more how to drive once I had that, because all of a sudden you had to think about what you were doing, because that didn't have a lot of anything else on it.
Yeah, sure. So that was probably the best way. I think that people should still be taught that way. You should be taught in as raw an experience as possible. Because like I say, these days, people don't, they're not trained how to brake. Like, what do you do if you lock up?
The trouble with that is that anti-lock brakes versus old-style brakes, what you do is, if you brake hard, is completely different. In old-style brakes, you had to pump your brakes when you brake hard. New ones, you just slightly, if pumping brakes doesn't help. It actually makes it worse.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. Like, because what do we do then when, because they're not taught, because on ABS, you just fucking stomp your foot down, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, what do they do when they fail? Because no one's taught now how to deal with it.
Mm.
Now people are just like, well, my brakes are going to work. Thump, foot down. If it fails, and all of a sudden you lock up, what do you do?
I think they rely on the fact that a lot of these systems, are the failure rate is so low.
Mm.
That is unlikely. They just don't want people getting the wrong habits, form style thing. I mean, I've had a situation where I'm going from a vehicle that had ABS to one that didn't have ABS, and having to do an emergency brake, and the back wheel's locking up, and it takes me, it's probably took me only a split second to think, oh shit, I need to take my foot off the brake.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a moment where it's like, my brain was like, why am I stopping it? Because your muscle memory kicked in and sort of like trained me one way or the other. And I did remember to put my brakes and managed to stop. I think a lot of these like systems they've got on vehicles now are pretty surprisingly redundant to get past.
Well, I don't know. The number of people I know that have had new cars where a sensor has failed and all of a sudden it's gone into limp home mode.
but it's gone into a safe fail state. Limp home. I have driven back from Birmingham NEC in limp home mode.
That's terrifying.
That was my Freelander. The fuel filter got clogged and the engine basically went to I don't know what I'm doing mode. Shut down the turbo. Basically, you couldn't rev it high enough against the turbo. We timed 0 to 60 time was about 80 seconds. We timed it.
Fantastic.
Driving that best, that took us about 4 hours to drive that back. That was an interesting experience.
It was exhausting, I imagine.
It was very exhausting. It was literally, that went back to old things. I thank my Land Rover for this, my old Land Rover for this. Being not a vehicle that was particularly quick, you had to think well in advance, like literally five, six cars down the line. You'd be watching and keeping your distance back, going, okay, that car's going to slow down. I'm now going to start easing off. So by the time it all fills through, I don't have to change gear. I can just sort of power on through.
Mm-hmm.
Just little things like that, sort of plan anticipation. So you don't have to check, so you can avoid hitting the brakes and changing gear and all that sort of stuff. All that sort of stuff had to be done. And you learn that by driving an older vehicle. Whereas newer vehicles, you can just, because they're so much responsive, it doesn't matter. But I do think that made better. And frankly, we had done that because when I tried to drive that Freelander, that made it a lot easier because, you know, we left a big gap in front, could see everything, play everything, because you just didn't want to have to change gear. Because if you came to a stop, it was going to take you another minute to get up to speed. But yeah, motorways were an interesting experience in that situation. Well, we made it home. We got home eventually.
Yeah, for sure. It kind of like sounds like riding an old 125, to be fair. You know, you 0 to 60 times, there ain't one.
No.
You know, it gets off the line pretty quick, but you ain't going anywhere.
Oh, this
fast.
Won't get off the line pretty quick either. This is not doing.
And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that you know the long. It might sound simple. Oh, well, you're driving slower, but it's exhausting. There's so much you have to process at lower speeds.
Yeah. It's yeah, and making decisions of when to change gear.
Yeah.
Planning to change, because you don't want to lose all your power, so you have to plan your change gear until at the right time, so you don't lose all your power and you get it back, and avoid, or ideally avoiding changing gear and avoiding braking is what you want to avoid. Mm-hmm. So you basically you make a nice big gap between you and the car in front, just hope so you can avoid having to touch that brake.
Yep.
So
good times.
It's good.
I don't know. I still think people should be taught more the guts of driving than just relying on modern systems. But then, I think, because as you say, that makes you a better driver.
It does.
You know what to do in a work. Like, for example, you know, do we need to? Is it really necessary to teach someone how to turn out of a hardcore skid? Like, put them in a skid car? No. Would it be better if we did though? Maybe. Probably.
Yeah, some countries they teach that. I think it's
yeah, they do. I can't remember.
Norway, I think, teach that because they have a lot of snow and ice. You're trained. You have to learn how to drive in a skid.
Yeah, so they put you straight in a skid car and then on a small track, don't they? So you have to actually be able to. And I think more places should do that. I know that in some countries. I mean, I looked at some of the motorcycle tests that you had to take even to ride like a moped in there. Some of those tests are fucking terrifying. I'm thinking to myself, dude, I'd never pass that.
Yeah.
But it'd make the roads a lot safer.
And I bet they, but how did you find which the other inspector was like, okay, do you know how to switch the bike on? Yes, here's your license.
Well, yeah, but that's, I mean, Vietnam's like, well, partly like that. Where was it? My mate went, Bermuda? Somewhere, like, I don't know, some, like he was on a little island and literally he just had to say, yeah, I'm old enough. And they just gave him a bike. Like, can you start it? Yes, here you go. Off you go. I think it's Taiwan's quite strict. And they've got, like, you know, where you have to ride up, like, this narrow kind of ridge. And then up along kind of like, you know how, like, a balance test. So they'd have to ride up and then along this narrow thing. And then if they drop it off the side, well, one, they're going to fall off and break the bike. Two, you know, obviously you fail. You don't have that level of control. You have to do it at slow speed. I don't know. I just think there should be more stuff like that. I know that less people will be able to pass. I know that I definitely wouldn't have been able to pass my test, but it'd just be, especially as you say, we're now going to have people in more powerful cars. They're not going to know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we built our society, because our society is so built round having access to a car or knowing someone who's got access to a car.
To a degree.
I mean, yes, you can make do with taxis and stuff like that, but that gets expensive quick. Depending on how much you use it.
You're not kidding. Because I mean, when the wife used to have to take a taxi from Norwich back down to here. That's a good 80 quid.
Yeah.
And even like when Bard used to do the podcast with us, when if you didn't give him a lift back and he had to get a taxi, or if there was any time he had to cross town, just crossing town's expensive, and this ain't a big town.
Yeah. So pretty quickly, if it's an occasional thing, it's all right. But if you have to do that every day for work, that's going to build up quick. And actually at some point you need a vehicle. Just doing things like going shopping if you can't get to live it, or just want to pop out and do it. It's our society is built round having transport like that. Not as bad as other countries, not say like in the States where
the States would be a nightmare.
Yeah. If you can't drive, you're fucked, really. You know, you're so limited to what you can do.
I mean, I will say that as far as like this country's concerned, I mean, I haven't had a driver's license in years. Well, I mean, I've got one now. I've only just got it back, but like I haven't been able to legally drive in years and years and years. And we've done fine. I can't drive, or I couldn't drive. The wife couldn't drive. We've been fine.
Yeah.
Because everything is set up in this country to, you know, you don't have to leave the house if you want to get shopping.
No.
It
helps that you predominantly work from home. That helps.
Yeah.
But if you, but and your wife says a lot of her jobs have been within walking distance, which again helps, or biking distance, which helps.
No, she's been out of town a lot. She's been out of town a lot.
Yeah. But if you lived, semi-rural.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if we lived like where we did back in Norwich City, that would have been a fucking nightmare because we lived right smack bang on the outsides of the city.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, aside from work, would have been all right.
Yeah.
I'd hate to live in a bigger country.
Yeah. Worse, Australia.
Wouldn't even like to imagine it, mate.
Yeah. Right, like your if you live on a farm in Australia, your trip at your local town could be like 100 miles away.
I know a couple of lads who their families own big farms in Australia, and they said, "Yeah, mate, you have to drive. If you can't drive, you're fucked."
I only went to Australia to do a work placement out there, and as he was going out there talking about what sort of things they'd be doing. And they're talking about when they were going to do the fences, and when they do the fences, because it's so big, the farm they have, they actually go camping. It's a multi-day thing. They drive round the whole perimeter. It takes them several days.
Oh yeah, of course.
So
yeah,
they have to drive round, and they basically take food and water supplies, and they go and they camp and work their way round the whole perimeter over like a week to get back. And it's like, it takes me about an hour to walk around our fences.
See?
You know, the idea of having to sort of like plan expedition to do your check your fences. Like day five, having to eat one of the dogs. You know, it's just this is not going to happen.
At the fucking farm.
Yeah. That's why we always take two along with us.
There you go.
It's a two-man job.
Is that like the old Star Trek thing? Every time they beam down four, they only bring back three.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Here, you farmhand, you're wearing the red flannel shirt today. What am I wearing the red one for? Oh, you'll find out.
Just because my shirt is red, it doesn't have to be.
I think my sister sent me this. It sent a picture, and it was back during lockdown. And it was a picture of Captain Kirk, and there's all the security guards in the red shirt. And he said, "Gentlemen, I'm pleased to announce that you are all essential."
Oh, dear. Beautiful.
Should I talk about some games, guys?
Yeah, mate. We've already been gone for, 38 minutes at this point?
Like I say, it's the round, and like I say, it's the episode where we discuss nonsense and games for 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's about the groove.
That's what I've heard this has come here for. I don't know why this is coming from. This is why.
No wonder it took us about 30,000 years to get to, 100?
103.
Woo! Nailed it.
Left 4 Dead, you can thank Left 4 Dead 2 for that. It's bumped our figures up.
Really?
Yeah, we've gained like more subscribers than playing Left 4 Dead than I think most anything else.
Yeah, well then we need to be playing. What was the other one? Back for Blood.
Back for Blood, I think.
And there's another zombie style game in VR. I think we should all play as well.
So Hours Out of Sunshine.
After the Fall. I think it's After the Fall.
Okay.
Just for shits
and
giggles.
Look it up. Yeah. So I've been playing, I talked about it briefly last podcast because I literally just started it. So I couldn't comment too much on it. I've been playing, I'm now about just over halfway, I think, Call of Cthulhu from 2018. It's a first person, it's actually a survival horror game once you sort of get deep enough into it. That takes a surprise. Right. For the first sort of like two or three acts, well, about sort of like first four or five chapters, it feels more like a walking simulator.
Okay.
In that you play a detective, Edward Pierce. I've got to do my memory, remember people's names. He's hired by this guy whose daughter and husband lived on this little island called Darkwater. And her and her husband and their little son she had started getting apparently a little bit jaded, started like painting, doing some weird paintings with weird things in them. Right. And she also, and the whole family dies in a fire. Everybody seems to get killed in this fire at their manor. But her father thinks, who's very influential, they're all rich people. He's very rich, like one of the richest people in like Chicago. And themselves are quite well off. He thinks there's more to it because there's something about the paintings. And so you look at the paintings, indeed, there is something a bit strange, but there's all like weird symbols and stuff in them. So he hires you to go to Darkwater and actually find out what's going on. So you get a boat to Darkwater and your first sort of section, you're on a like a dock. Now, I thought the game from the first sort of level felt it was going to be quite open, like sort of open world-esque, because the dock's actually a fairly large area. You can do a lot of walking around. There's lots of people to talk to. There's a few like sort of like little, I want to say side quests, but there's like sort of little things you can sort of do and listening and catching on. You can sort of like you're basically when you get there, there's you find that the family had a warehouse there. You've got to try and sort of find a bit about the warehouse and what's going on and find a way to get into the warehouse. There's like a local gang that sort of took over because this should be a big raiding town, but the whales have all disappeared. So it's basically a dying town, just people sort of left behind. It's well out of its heyday. And it's like a local gang that's all coming, it's all taking over things, one by this lady called, who's nicknamed Cat. And sort of like, and she's sort of like, sort of taking over, running things and so forth. There's lots of old drunk fishermen, there's prohibition going on, but that's not stuff on alcohol. But it's basically the whole town's running down, and you can feel it's sort of on the edge of just collapsing because there's nothing really there. And you go to the docks and you eventually sort of find your way up to their manor and start walking around them, sort of like learning what's going on. You run into a local policeman who offers to take you with him and he'll give you a round chap up there and take you around the manor and show what's going on. But once you've got past that sort of first open sort of world, it feels like it's going to be an open world style game. That all seems to stop. It goes just sort of back to sort of more linear levels. Each sort of chapter, there's only sort of like one way really through it you can go and so forth. So it sort of loses that sort of open world aspect. It's sort of interesting mechanics around it is your guy is a private investigator. So he'll go into areas and you'll like go, right, what's happened here? And you'll go to like an investigation mode where like sort of like you have to sort of like walk around. He'll like, you can like look at things and analyze things with like sort of like, and sort of like, you're like CSC, you can look at it, analyze it, and determine what's going on. He'll work out what's going on, and so forth. And he does this through like a series of like tests that, because he's got this, your skills in it are, when you should look at your skills, again, which all applies, it's more about exploring and stuff, and rather than straight up fighting combat and stuff, is all more of a whole. So it's that your skills are all around intellectual stuff. So you have an investigation skill, which basically it makes you better at deducing things, especially better at picking locks. Interesting combination. You have a psychological skill, which means you can analyze people and you can try and, if you see something's happened, you can try and like analyze the psychology of what's caused it to happen, why people have done things. There's like a linguistic skill. They call it something else, but it's basically speech, you know, good at speaking. There is a skill called spot, which is interesting because the higher up is, there'll basically be objects in the game as you go near and they get highlighted to say, hey, you can interact with this. If your spot isn't high enough, some things you won't see, they won't highlight.
Okay.
So you will miss things. There's one other skill which I can't remember. I come off the top of my head now, so forth. So those skills you can upgrade. You basically, as you go through the levels and as you do things, you'll get these little like you'll get like little points that you can put on upgrading a skill. And a skill you don't actually get like more benefits, you actually upgrade that to individual levels. But so maybe like sort of 8 skill points get to the next level. But what you can do is you can invest them as you go along. So if you collect, say, 4 skill points, you could put it straight away into that skill and like verify it, and then you only know 4 to get up. So you can sort of like, rather than to like save up and unlock in one go, you can just invest them as you go.
Which is a royal pain in the ass in most other games. You are literally sat on skill points that do nothing until you hit a hard
figure. Yeah, but this one that you have to do that. I mean, you can. Functionally, it's no different. Functionally, it's no real difference doing that way. But it means you can sort of like put progress towards something. So you sort of almost remind yourself what you were doing, put progress towards stuff, and feel a gain there. There are 2 skills that you cannot personally upgrade. That is medicine and occultism. Those are upgraded by interacting with things in the environment. So medicine is generally upgraded by finding medical books or texts or anything like that. And if you find them, then your medical skill goes up a bit. Occultism is found by encountering occultist things. So reading books, looking at occultist symbols, observing sort of like paintings and stuff, that will push your occultism skill up, which again improves your ability to deduce things around the occult. So that's a bit more an interesting one because you have to sort of like actually, it all ties with the others because at least you've got all your like other ones high enough. You may miss some of the more occult stuff and not be able to upgrade it. And a lot of the levels are based around sort of like the levels of A sort of like puzzle focus, so finding your way through trying to work out what happened in a burnt building, sort of tracing the route of a murderer in there. Pretty about sort of six or seven is where you actually start getting to the more the survival horror side of it. So the game is for what I've seen anyway, for what I've played so far, is you can't fight back. You are just hiding and sneaking. It's got a rudimentary stealth mechanic system. You've seen it familiar in most of the games, you'll be familiar with it. It's the old, when someone spots you, a little white bar appears and gradually fills up, which is how all stealth games seem to work these days, to let you know someone spotted you. And if it goes red, that means they're actually going to chase you down. It's got leaning in it, which is quite deep. It's brought back leaning, which is right. we don't see a lot of games be able to lean around a corner, which is good to play again. So you can sort of like look and hunt and so forth, trying to avoid people. The first time you do that, you're stuck in a mental asylum, having to sort of escape, and that's all like teaches you the basics. You're up against sort of human enemies, but you will start to encounter. You encounter all little hints, but pretty soon you'll start to encounter other parts of the Cthulhu mythos. Now, I went to this last week and we discussed it off podcast. I don't know a great deal about Lovecraft and Cthulhu mythos. I know bits and pieces through what TV tropes would call cultural osmosis. You know, if you've hung around places enough, you'll tend to pick up little bits and pieces. It's like no names of the characters in Star Trek. If you know what Star Trek, you know them because you've picked it up through listening to people and so forth. So I knew bits and pieces about Cthulhu. I knew what the dude looked like. I knew that for some reason fish seemed to be heavily involved. I knew that it was cosmic horror, so like a big, overworldly horror that's man can't comprehend. Yes. And I knew insanity was a big thing. You know, the idea is man can't comprehend it, so they tend to go insane when they start researching into it. It's all beyond human comprehension, which I thought was a neat, cool concept. But that's all about my limits of my knowledge of it, of what's going on. I know it involves cults and stuff and secret underground cults and stuff. I know that one. You could tell very much, actually. Warhammer 40k Chaos has been influenced by Call of Cthulhu, which 40k stole a lot, borrowed heavily, lots of influences. And the way sort of Chaos works is very Lovecraftian. It was very much inspired by Lovecraft. I instantly recognised all of the tropes. Oh, this is where they got it from. So it's been quite neat because for me, I don't know much about it, so it's all been like experiencing it fresh, and so I thought it's been quite cool. Because I don't know much about it. I know some of his books. Call of Cthulhu is probably the famous or the one that I knew anyway. You mentioned
Shadow over Innsmouth.
Innsmouth, which actually there was a Call of Cthulhu game called that, wasn't there? I believe there was actually a Call of Cthulhu based on that.
Sure,
I believe about early 2000s, I think.
Innsmouth is a one of the kind of big
settings, isn't it?
Yeah, because I believe, I could be wrong, Innsmouth was one of the only Lovecraft stories to be published in book form when he was alive.
All right.
I could be wrong. It is one of the big ones. And a lot of kind of side stuff that I've seen is based on Innsmouth. Like, I linked you earlier to a game I played years ago called The Secret World, and the entirety of the start of that game, an MMO, the first world you go to is Kingsmouth.
Yeah.
And that's got fish people, and it's all very Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
So a lot of people tend to kind of lean on that.
Yeah. I mean, I said to you, because I was like asking, because Lovecraft was a very long time ago. I was like, is it not in the public domain now? So I had a quick look earlier, and most of his books are now in the public domain.
All right.
So basically anything he published before published in 1927 or earlier are now in the public domain. Anything published after that is possibly in the public domain because the law changed. And
right.
Basically, for to be in the be under copyright after that date, the copyright had to be renewed by the holder, and it had to have a bit of documentation that says this item is copyrighted. You know, you get in a book that says this is copyrighted. It had to have that in it. So There's a dispute over whether anyone's actually found a copy which says this is copyrighted. So it's disputed whether those are in copyright or not. If they're not, in theory, they'll go into public domain in 2035, everything will be in public domain, because that's when his last stuff was published.
Right.
So Call of Cthulhu is post 2027, so the Call of Cthulhu is currently not in copyright. And Shadow of Innsmouth isn't copyright either. Call of Cthulhu is not in the public domain yet, nor is Shadow of Innsmouth in the public domain yet. So it's still technically copyrighted, but won't be many more years, and anyone can make a game based around it. Interestingly, Lovecraft himself apparently was very pro loose when it comes to his own career, like people like using his stuff. He was quite happy people to do it. He wanted to get he encouraged people to reference stuff in his book. So like the famous book in Call of Cthulhu is the Necronomicon.
Necronomicon.
That's it. My dyslexia doesn't help in this one. Necronomicon. That one there. The
Book of the Dead.
Book of the Dead. That was one of his, and he encouraged people to reference that, and he asked people to reference Cthulhu and Yosloth and so forth. He encouraged people to do it. I'm getting it all from the wiki, in hopes to sort of spread it a little bit. I mean, obviously, he sort of wanted people to do it, which is interesting.
Well, he was poor as fuck anyway, so yeah. I mean, he wasn't making a huge amount of money.
No,
he was not particularly popular way back in the day. It was only after his death that his stuff really started to kind of catch on.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's very, very different sort of like to what was being made at the time. That sort of style horror was actually very ahead of its, very unique, very ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horror then was still very run-of-the-mill sort of cheesy, what we call like still like B-movie-ish horror. So he was quite ahead of his time, so I can understand it being, you know, not getting particularly popular until quite a while after his death, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the answer is yes, it will be in public domain. In the next few years, it will be in public domain anyway. But yeah, so But I have to say, I am enjoying the storyline. It's kept me hooked. It's been nice because I've been getting so into it that I'm actually sort of like making that was so. They said that, so that means I find myself actually making deductions and planning things. Normally, I tend to sort of find a storyline to sort of flow over me and not worry too much about it. This I'm actually like, oh yeah, that's what that means. That means so and so is involved in this. I'm sort of getting quite into it, which I quite like. The survival horror bits work okay. They're fine. It's a simple but fairly solid stealth section. If you like stealth stuff, if you don't like stealth stuff, you're not going to like it. Because you have to be stealthy. There's a bit later on where you'll encounter some horrible beastie, and there's some neat tricks actually. I need to look up this up and see if I was right in this. You'll come across, and this is some minor spoilers I'm about to talk about here. You'll come across this beast that someone has talked about previously, and he'll say things like, "Don't look at it. Don't keep your eye. If you look at it, it can see you." And I was then later on encountered said creature, and I'm sort of trying to avoid it and so forth, but I was trying to watch what it was doing. And every time I watched it, it seemed to go for it, and then I suddenly remembered, oh, he said, "Don't look at it. It will see you. So you mustn't look at it." You have to like keep it sort of like, you have to sort of like pass all glass, you know where it is, and try and sort of use sound to work out where it is. So you can try and avoid it, which is quite neat. And how you sort of, and I like the fact that it's, there's no objective markers. It's left, you are left to figure out for yourself. So things will highlight when you get near them, but it won't tell you, like this, again, this creature, it doesn't tell you it doesn't give you any clue from the cutscene where it's introduced, yet no clue of how you're meant to escape it. You've got no weapons. You've got nothing on you apart from your lantern and your torch. You've got nothing to defend yourself apart from your wits and the hiding. And you've just got to figure out how to defeat it. And there's no real clues. There is one contextual clue. If you get to the right bit, the guy will say something about it, but it took me a while, but even then it's like, oh, I need to do this, but he won't explain how to do it. It's like, noticing games like, I need to do X, if only I could find something like Y to do it, and you go, oh, I saw Y earlier, I'll go get it. This is more like, I need to do X. Right, then figure out yourself. I quite like that, because you have to sort of like, I like
it's very old school.
Very old school, very, yeah.
What's the genre called? Immersive sim. It's very immersive sim-y in that way, because immersive sims weren't known for holding your hand or telling you to go X and Y, and you had to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's more smaller scale than it's not a proper immersive.
Imagine almost like a interactive fiction, but where instead of it being a text adventure, you actually got visual cues on the screen.
Yeah,
but it's not guiding you like a modern game. You have to literally figure it out.
Yes.
You can figure out how to do a text adventure, but you have to actually use your brain and search the areas and all that kind of stuff. Would you say not being able to look at the beastie in question, would you say that's more intimidating?
Yes, because you don't know where it is. You know roughly where it is, but you don't know exactly where it is.
Because I've always found that the second I see the monster trying to kill me, I don't care. If I get caught by it once, I don't care.
That's what I've always said about survival horror games. The biggest flaw in survival horror games is when you first encounter something, you're trying to keep away from it, it's scary. The second it catches you, and I've always said this, the second it catches you, the fear's gone. Because what's it going to do?
Well, you know what
it's
going
to
do.
Exactly. At that point, it becomes more of a frustration to avoid it.
Yes.
And you're more like, oh shit, it's going to try and find me. I better hide here. Oh, don't find me there because I don't want to repeat this last, since my last save, I don't want to repeat it again.
Agreed.
Some games are better than others. I actually found Alien Isolation, which I need to finish. Alien Isolation, actually, I didn't used to get that feeling, because the fact that you couldn't save anywhere for stars was a big, big change. You had to sort of like plan it and so forth. And the fact that it was a little more random where it would appear and go. So you wasn't like just wandering around the level, just you could just like, oh, it's over there, I can avoid it. I've always had the issues. That's always been an issue with survival horrors. This one, it definitely was more intimidating, because I said, once I figured that out, I never quite knew where it was because obviously I've recorded this, so let's play, but play on it earphones. So I've not got proper surround. So I've got like left and right basically. And that helps. Like, you can sort of get a rough idea, but it's certainly. And when you hear it screech when it's found you, and like, I better not look at it, and you can run it yourself. I'm just going to have to run and just hope I know roughly where it is. It was surprisingly effective, actually. Surprisingly effective. I did die quite a few times to it. What I will say about that puzzle, though, is I don't know if maybe there was a clue I could have had. The puzzle involves having to find a specific item in the area you're in, but there are lots of items it could be. Now, I don't know if perhaps if I'd had high level, because I looked at like round the room and stuff, looked at a lot of these items. I don't know if perhaps if there had been had a higher skill and something, perhaps because one of the guy might have gone something like, oh, this item looks a bit odd, it's got a symbol on it, like matches X, Y, Z. Do you know, to give a bit of a clue as to which item you need? Because that'd be neat, because if you're getting experience in this, you might recognise something, but if you're not, you don't recognise it, you have to like brute force it. In the end, I just had to try everything until eventually I found the one it was. And once you pick it up, he does actually say, oh, this one is different to the others. But it's not, he only does when he picks it up. Once you pick it up, you're sort of committed to using it anyway. So that doesn't make a lot of difference. But at least it's like, gives you a bit of relief, like, oh, I've got the right one now. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
There's also, so the idea of issue with one puzzle, where I got the right thing to do. However, my colourblindness kicked in and I had to like spot, like say, a little go about giving sort of clues away. I had to count a certain number of things at a certain colour and I miscounted them. I don't count because I count all the things. Actually, there's only half that colour because of my eyes. I couldn't tell the difference. So I was like, I'm sure I've got this right. I've counted right. What have I done wrong? Is this like... Have I just like been really quick at this and like over and not thought about it enough? In the end, I had to look up on a wiki and go, "Oh, I couldn't count."
I hate bits like that because I have issues. Same kind of groove. Mine's not as bad as yours, from what I can tell. When we were playing Silent Hill, because there were some things you couldn't see that I could, and there were some things you could see that I couldn't. I can't do bits where things crisscross. So if similar colours crisscross, if they're next to each other but there's a break, I'm not too bad.
Mm.
But as soon as things start to crisscross, the colours blend and I can't see them at all.
Oh, right.
So I then start. I can't follow a path.
Yeah.
I hate stuff like that in games, and I find that a lot of games are making puzzles like that, and I can't stand it. I cannot stand it.
I think the worst puzzle that I had to deal with in a game was in a little little 2D horror game I played a couple of years ago. And you one room you find a piano and you can press the keys on the piano. In another room you find a little recording of a piece of music. You have to play the piece of music on the piano. Fuck me, because trying to sort of work out which tone is which and so forth, which order to press the keys, and it's not a simple piece of music either. It's not simple. Fuck me, that was a nightmare. That was again a going on YouTube where someone actually goes, here is the order you to press the keys in. Because I would have been there for hours because I just couldn't work out which note was which.
I remember the, I can't remember what it was called, it was something like Soul Trap or something like that, was an audio game on iPhones that had a puzzle quite similar to that. And it was literally all just audio, so you put your headphones on, and then depending on what tones were played, you'd have to do certain things. It was like a visual novel, but leaned heavily on audio. I thought that kind of thing was very, 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 very good, but sometimes can be really quite frustrating. Kind of like when we did that thing in VR chat a while ago where we had to press certain keys to match the tones that we'd hear in the room as we walked in. Especially if like the tone that you hear only plays once or whatever.
Yeah.
That can be awful. Or if you've got like a visual reference, it's not so bad. But if you are going strictly by audio, not great, not fun.
I mean, I feel that I'm slightly... I think I'm one of the few people who actually are a bit tone deaf. Mm-hmm. And I can't really differentiate notes that well. I couldn't listen to a piece of music and go, oh, yeah, I can sort of hear those differences. But if you played a piece of music and go, okay, the notes at the start of the music was the same as the end of the music, I wouldn't be able to tell you. They could be... I wouldn't be able to like compare them. So... that sort of puzzle where you have to listen to a bit of music and then like recite it, I struggled because I couldn't match the notes up.
Yeah.
Very easily.
I'd struggle to remember it, to be fair.
Well, it helps you in the sense that once you've listened to a bit of music, it starts playing of the sort of like, because you're in like a school, and it starts playing mm-hmm. sort of the tannoy in the school. But it's playing, because it's playing a tannoy, it's like distorted. So it helps you that, because you can still hear it. But I just struggle like mad actually just matching things up. So that's, I had to call it quits on that. Sure. And go look it up. But yeah, I have to say, I am really enjoying Call of Cthulhu. I wasn't sure if I would, but I'm actually really enjoying it. I like the fact that the sort of bits of survival stuff I have done haven't been too over the top. They've only been like the odd bit here and there. And I hope they don't mm-hmm. go too far and throw it at you constantly. Have the like odd segment here and there. It keeps it sort of like before it becomes too annoying. Because actually, again, the thing about survival horrors is you shouldn't constantly spend a lot of time constantly having to sneak and hide. They should be little bits in between, like other sort of like palate cleansers.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, that's what Frictional are quite good with their. Who've made the Amnesia games, who made Soma, which is still one of my most favourite games of the last sort of 10 years, Soma. It'd definitely be my sort of top five. It was actually for when we did our Game of the Decades. And and they are brilliant at giving you just enough stealth bits balanced off with puzzle bits or just story bits, actually, to give you a chance to get used to sort of like get sort of a bit of a pack, get a bit of a break, because stealthing, particularly when you're using like checkpointing systems and so forth like that, and you can't just save anywhere, is stressful because you don't want to get caught because you may have to go back a huge section. So it is quite stressful.
And some people say that's a good thing. I find it gets very annoying very, very, very quickly.
I think there's a lot of... I personally, having played games that do both, I prefer it, if I'm honest, because I find that when it's the alternative, when you can just save anywhere, it then becomes annoying. Just annoying. And it's like, oh, fuck. When you've got a little bit of stress in it, when you then get past it, the sort of feeling of relief... you get a little dopamine high.
Whilst I understand that sometimes games aren't particularly good with their checkpointing systems.
No, that is true. That is true. That is very true. That is very true.
If it's done right, it's very easy to do wrong. If it's done right, fine.
Yeah,
but there are some games that both you and I have played where checkpointing is absolutely atrocious and you're like, I've got it. And then somehow you get caught and you're like, all the way back to the start, you go, and you're like, oh, for sake.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like I say, I feel that Frictional do it right. Alien Isolation did it right in my book. I think they just got the right balance, but it is very difficult. And I think the only way you can make it work is lots and lots of playtesting. Yes. To get people playing again and again, to get it just right. And also give all your enemies a bit of a trick you can exploit, and once you know you can exploit the trick, you feel you've got a chance. That's what it works. I also think you have to have the mindset to enjoy those type of games.
Yes,
I like those style games. I like that sort of style stealth games. I love that sort. I quite like survival horror games. If you don't, so my example of a bad survival horror game is going to be that really shit one we played for Halloween, Outlast.
Oh, that was terrible.
That was terrible.
That was atrocious.
Yes. That is a horrendous example. That's a terrible example for a survival horror game. It's badly done across the board in every way possible. The enemies aren't particularly interesting. And the checkpoint is
the world was
just
completely unbelievable.
The world
checkpoint was,
just, was
broken.
They had like one colour palette of everything. And it was boring. Checkpoint was shit. There was not enough breathing space between sections. So you're like, oh, I've got to get a key. Oh, it's fallen down somewhere else. Okay. Oh, it's fallen down again. Oh, for fuck's sake. There's a lot of that going on. That is Survival Horror done badly.
It's lazy.
It's just like a play testing. If they had had a group of people like this, they'd say, this is not right. You need to change X, Y, Z and listen to it. They could have made it better, but they just didn't.
Blows my mind. I think they made a sequel, didn't they?
They are made a sequel.
Could we play that?
No, we haven't played it. Apparently, the sequel, for what I'm saying, the sequel's a bit more. Some people say the sequel's quite a lot better. I think it's more open areas than the sequel, because that's the trouble with Outlast, is that every level is very linear.
Mm.
So there wasn't a lot of like sort of different directions you could really go in.
I'm not going to lie, mate. Until you mentioned it, I completely forgot about it. That was the one where we got pushed through a window, fell into a basement asylum thing.
Maybe.
I don't
know. Possibly. Maybe. I don't remember. You had a camera that you could film stuff with.
Sure.
You had that doctor who had like sort of the.
Did we finish it?
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh my god, my brain must have shut off when you.
Oh yeah, I think it's on the channel. I think it's on our channel.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So if you want the horror, check out Outlast. Link in the show notes.
Yeah. You want to see our horror? Check out Outlast.
I think it's on the show notes. So if it's not, I apologize.
If you want to cause someone to have a mental, if you want to see someone have a mental break through survival horror and not in a good way,
I still think if I had to pick a survival horror as the sort of example, Saima is my example of world.
I think I have Saima. I don't think I've played it though.
Saima is my. I love the storyline of Saima. I love.
Was that the one with the robot?
Yes, lots of robots.
And it's the idea of consciousness and what makes one human.
Yes. Yep. Yep. You're in an underwater base. It's got great atmosphere, fantastic atmosphere. The storyline and the philosophy behind it's really interesting. They really dig deep and ask a lot of questions around what makes consciousness you? Are you, if you have two people, if you copy paste on consciousness to somebody else, are they any less of a person because of it? And that's all the big question it's asking. And you have sort of discuss and so forth. And it's just brilliant. Yes, your main character is a bit of an idiot.
But it is one of those kind of, as you say, it's kind of like the H.P. Lovecraft thing where it is a very out there concept.
Yeah.
So, I mean, could your character be an idiot? Yes. Or is it just something that he just can't comprehend?
Maybe. Because
imagine if you were sat in that scenario, you're like, wait, what? I just did the thing, but nothing happened. It did, just not to you.
So, that's the thing, you see. And the big issue is his little buddy who has with him, Catherine. She explains to him several times how it works. And the thing is, he experiences it. So basically, the whole premise is their method of transferring your consciousness is a copy paste rather than a cut paste.
Yes.
So when you wake up, first time you wake up in Paphos 2, you feel like in your mind, you're Simon, you go have a brain scan, you close your eyes when the brain scan happens, and then you wake up in Paphos 2. What actually happened is Simon had a brain scan, he's gone off and left, that brain scan has been stored on file, and then eventually it's been used like as a, it was basically used as a template for like further studies. That's then got downloaded into a robot, and then it's just carried on from where it was recorded to. So you start the whole game as a copy of Peace of Consciousness. You're not the Simon. You're a copy of Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of like, you figure that out fairly, that sort of explained to you fairly soon. A little bit later on, there's a section where you have to get your, because your body basically, you need to go deeper down. Your body's in a suit that can't move, get down there. So the easiest thing for you to do is basically find a corpse that's already in the suit and basically fit the stuff that's necessary to make it work and then copy yourself into that consciousness so you can go down.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you play from the point of view of the Simon who gets copied.
Yes.
And into the new suit. But you can hear your old Simon, the one you were playing as, saying, oh, it hasn't worked. This hasn't worked. Why am I still here? I should be in the other suit. So I hadn't figured it out. At that point, Simon, who you're playing as, should have a pretty good idea how it works. Because he's got the old version of him sat there in front of him, not knowing what's happened. And you basically...
Oh, well, every new copy, yeah, should then go, I already get how this goes.
Exactly.
But it seems... I would imagine that's probably more of a mental break on the grounds that they now know they're stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're fucked, basically. Yeah. Yes, there is a copy of their consciousness, but they themselves are now effectively doomed.
Yes.
And then having to accept one's fate is probably enough to cause one to have a mental break.
Well, yeah. Because at the end, he actually goes on, and I said, you promised me we'd be going into the Ark. You promised me. It's like, no, she explained to you so many times. It's not how it works, Simon. You really are. You've experienced this, Simon. She explained to you so many times. And
that's a mental break.
Yeah.
That's a mental break. That's the idea of saying, well, you can either live in your current body or we can make a copy of you, but you will still suffer and die. And it's like, wait, but I'm still going to live. No, your consciousness will in another body. You are still going to die. Yeah. And that's something that a lot of people just wouldn't be able to process.
Well, there's a whole level in Soma where you find a group of people because... Catherine in game, she's a scientist who basically revives this technology and starts to use it to sort of like say, because the basic sort of overall background event of Soma is humanity's been wiped out by an asteroid. But because you were at the bottom of the sea, the people at Plathos 2 survived.
Sure.
They are all that's left. So they have this idea of, Catherine's idea of copying everybody's minds, putting them into a thing called the Ark and firing it into space. And those copies can basically live on in space. And most people get the idea. Some say, I'm not going to do it and refuse to do it. Some, however, have the idea, led by one guy, of like, well, the only way we can really get this, what he calls continuity, is if we have to sort of like end the current self time. So the second he has his brain scanned, the second his brain scan's done, it's complete. He shoots himself. Yeah.
Sure.
And that's how he feels, that he'll then actually get transferred across. And a few other people sort of copy this, and that's what eventually leads to them shutting down Catherine's project, because like, I can't have people just keep committing suicide every time they get brain scanned.
Sure.
It's an interesting... that's what I mean. It really does a great job of exploring this concept in depth. It does a great job of exploring all these ideas and thoughts. Sort of all the questions that I sort of had about it, it answered or it explored. Because it's a very philosophical debate of if you are copy-paste, if you've got all the same thoughts and feelings as before, are you just as valid a person as the one who you're copied from?
Yes.
But that comes down to, what's your opinion on consciousness? Is consciousness part of you? Is consciousness a more wider concept, or is it intrinsically linked to you as a being? So if you copy a consciousness into your computer and that computer then can talk back to you and say, as far as it's concerned, or in the case of Soma, their example is into a robot body that has, you know, the same inputs as you, the same sort of things. As far as it is concerned, the thought process is, if you close your eyes and someone copies your consciousness, puts it into a robot with its like cameras switched off, how do you know which one you are without opening your eyes? You don't.
Of course not.
Exactly.
Because in its mind,
sarcastic air quotes, it is you.
Yeah.
And you are you. You know.
Yeah. It's a real interesting debate in philosophy. And I got my mother to play it because they usually give good game recommendations. So I said, you'll find this quite thought frame. Sister hated it. She doesn't like games which don't have happy endings.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And it doesn't have a happy. It sort of has a happy ending, but it doesn't. It has a happy ending for one version of Simon. And And she disliked it. And when she games doesn't have a happy ending, she's like, no, I don't like it at all. And she'll just, that's it, it's gone. But we spent hours debating the game afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly, it was a couple of conversations because we're debating what our thought process was. I'm basically saw the same thought process as you are, that both are valid entities.
Of course.
And she's more
I would probably say that if you were to put your own consciousness into a computer, robot, or whatever, and then you were to get into a debate to say that to the other consciousness that they are in fact a machine, they would probably have a breakdown because it wouldn't compute to them.
Yeah. Or if they know they're in a robot, they would tend to say, so what? I have all the same thought process as you, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think the problem is, though, that they... That's a hard thing. That's a hard pill to swallow again. Is the human mind capable of processing that you are now no longer you? You are you, but you're not you. You are not the you.
Yeah.
So then which becomes the...
I think a lot of people have the little leap that I feel a lot of people struggle with, and this is what my point was. So one of the things we'll come up with is when the default people feel say is, well, if there's a copy of me in XYZ, it's not me. I'm still me. That's just a copy.
Well, no, but it is
I agree with you, Skaz. This is sort of like what I feel a lot of default people do. They'll go, sure. Well, no, it's clear not me. It's a copy. But I was like, that's fine saying that because you're staying here. You can just sort of like separate out from where you're from your point of view as being the original. But now imagine you suddenly found out that you're not the original. You are the copy.
Mm-hmm.
Your viewpoint is going to dramatically change the whole subject.
That's where I believe the mental break would come in.
Yeah.
Because if it could be proven that you're not the original, that's like, well, shit, how far does this go?
Yeah.
Because realistically, how does the original know that the original is the original?
Exactly. We don't even know what is consciousness. I mean, for all we know, every time you go to sleep and wake up, you are a copy of the previous day.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know. We have no idea. Does your consciousness get suspended overnight, or does it sort of actually get like rebooted in the morning? Mm-hmm. It could explain why you have a good mood, wake up in a good mood some days, and some days you don't. You don't know. Mm-hmm. Is that you sort of did a dodgy backup? You don't know.
Sure.
So I think until someone's... Obviously, we can't... At the moment, we haven't got technology to put someone into that situation. I think until someone's put the situation, they couldn't possibly judge it. Because I had one guy say, well, if I knew I was the copy, it's like, well, I'm the copy, so I wouldn't mind about being shut down. It's like, no, you fucking wouldn't.
No, because in that case, you're going to want to live.
Yeah, of course you are.
Yeah, like every fibre of your being is wired to want to survive.
Yeah.
So the idea that someone could just pull the plug.
Yeah.
Imagine you now being told that someone has the power just to pull the plug on you.
Yeah.
That would freak you the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine it's not a robot. Imagine it's a straight up perfect clone of you. Straight up perfect clone and literally a boop, copy paste of your scene. So from all points of view, mm-hmm. No, you can't be told the difference apart. Sure. Who's the more valid person? You both are. It's the simple answers, but it's a very awkward. I think the idea freaks people out a bit. Some people out a bit. Because you can't wrap your head around it really, because it doesn't happen. At least not as far as aware. At least not as far as aware. We may be all like Westworld style robot duplicates to get uploaded every morning. We don't know.
Could be.
We just so it's an interesting. But this sort of debate, I was saying, we had it gave us weeks debate, and that is why I love Soma, because it explores it so much and it's so open for debate. the debate's on.
It's one of the things I kind of liked about Cyberpunk. Not quite as in depth as that, but you know, solid character development. The moral implications of doing what was done in Cyberpunk. So, again, I don't want to spoil anything in Cyberpunk if anyone's mm-hmm. played it, because a lot of people are now going into it after recent updates. But
yes, yeah.
I like games that make you think.
Yes.
If they can keep me on my toes, because if I start to predict things, and I have this problem with TV and film, it doesn't take me very long to start working out patterns, as you've found when we've had discussions before. I start to dismantle things into small chunks very quickly. Mm. And if I recognize a pattern too early, you might as well just put the whole fucking thing in the bin, because you won't yeah. surprise me. I like things to catch me off guard.
Yes. Yeah. No, I get that. I also think, yeah, I mean, I think Cyberpunk treads very similar territory to Soma in some ways. Mm. Without giving away too much information, it treads some similar territory. And it is an interesting debate. There's a lot of interesting debates, but anyway, I've gone on slight tangent how much I love Soma, but it's a game that I loved. I don't think I'll ever play through it again because I won't be able to get experience the first time through again.
Well, of course not. No, it's a one-time trick.
Exactly.
It's a one-time trick.
Yeah. And so
because you already know how it works. You already know what it's going to do. And if it's yeah. if the story doesn't change, if it doesn't have massive ending, like sweeps, you know, like you can go from, oh, this is what happens if you do it this way, this is what happens if you do it another way.
Yeah, you got no choice.
Unless it has that kind of thing, there's no point. There's no. really no point.
No, there's like a couple bits you can, like, there's only like a couple bits you could like have a determination of, as it were. Otherwise, the game, the end is the end. It's fixed.
Sure. So what we're basically saying is, so where are we saying that Soul Cthulhu sits in the best of the best, which we'd say is Soma at this point in your mind? Mm-hmm. Like that is survival horror done right.
Yeah.
To a degree. And then you've got Outlast, was it? I've already forgotten.
Mate, that's like saying, so where do you sit on Teas Night? You could have a steak or some horse shit. Where would you say the cheeseburger sits on the scale? Well,
yeah, you know. But some people would say, if you were talking to, say, a vegetarian, vegan, someone who can't process meats,
I would love my horse shit. I only eat the most natural horse shit. I insist that my horses have not been given any natural parts like wormers and stuff, so I can chew my horse shit lovely in the evenings.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But so, are you saying, would we say Call of Cthulhu kind of swings how much further? Because we know it's nowhere near Outlast.
Thankfully.
It can't be.
It's
that,
enjoyable, but for starters.
Yeah. It doesn't literally feel like rubbing, I don't know, habanero sauce, chili peppers and that onto your bollocks after cheese gratering yourself. Because that was pretty much Outlast. That's an experience you want to forget in a hurry.
Yeah. I will say, in Outlast's credit, the section with the mad doctor, that was actually quite good.
Is that the one where we were having to hide under like beds and stuff?
Yes, I can't remember, because it was a big open area and you had to use some strategy to avoid him, and you had to do a lot of projects and stuff whilst he's about. That was quite good because you weren't stuck in a linear place running away from one guy and had some different colours on the walls for a change. Blood. That was actually...
I was going to say, yeah.
Rather than the same texture. I'm pretty sure they only used three textures in that entire game.
Probably.
I would say so far, like I say, I've only encountered like literally two. There's been two sections of stuff I've had to deal with, which is nice. I would say probably. As a Cassandra's comment, because I've not played a lot more of them. I've not counted a lot more of the sections yet. But I would say it's definitely a lot more towards the Soma side of things, and that it's got. And so, unless it suddenly changes in the last half of the game is all survival or stealth all the time, which will kill it for me.
Sour it somewhat.
Yeah. Like I say, you have to have just the right amount of... The actual amount of stealth... Again, take some of the amount of actual like stealth you do is actually quite low, really. There's quite a lot of sections where... And you know when you're safe. You'll get to a bit where it's like, okay, I'm safe now. You know, it's
all about atmosphere.
Yeah. It doesn't overstay its welcome. And the enemy desires...
I think they do that too much. They overload you with tension, and after a point you just break, and then you become mentally exhausted, and then you just shut down from it. You go, well, this is pointless.
Yeah. The other thing that Soma did right, and which technically so far Corfu has done right, is that each set of enemies you encountered, or each enemy you encountered in Soma, were different in terms of how they moved, how they interacted, how their strategies worked.
Sure.
And they're very inventive, some of them. So you had to, every enemy you encountered, you had to relearn how it worked, which was nice because it meant there was a variety. Whereas in the case of, say, Outlast, it was the same enemy throughout the entire fucking game. So, and your choice to avoid him was run. And that was what made it, boy, again, which is why the Doctor was a good section, because it was a different style enemy. And that's where it works. You have to change up and not do the same thing. And so far, Call of Cthulhu has done that because I've had humans and some outer-worldly demon-y thing. And they are very different. So far, it's definitely in towards the Soma, but once I finish it, I'll be able to give its actual rating, and we'll see if it manages to be the lovely steak Soma or the horse shit Outlast.
Sure. I might give it a go because you actually kindly bought me the game at the end of the last podcast.
Yeah.
And it's Steam Deck compatible.
Well, there you go.
So I believe I've actually got it installed on my Steam Deck. Yeah. So I may have to give it a go.
Yes.
Control-wise, how is it? Because I'm going to try and use it on pad. I don't know.
It's controls very... So, yeah, it's very simple. There's like... usual WASD, there's no jump or anything in it. Crouch, run, interact. Very standard set of controls. I don't know what would be on control pad, as I've reconfigured mine.
Never.
Yeah. but to lean, you have to press, you basically, it's a button combination. So, because I've reconfigured it, it's right mouse button and the S, either A or D. I have no idea what that would be on normal default setup.
Oh, sure. They could just say, like, pad right bumper, and then they feel
right. Yeah, I don't know what it would be, but yeah. So the controls are very, very simple.
Okay. So I was just curious, because I don't know. Is this game actually on console? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it must be.
Oh, well, sure. Then it'd play fine on Steam Deck, then. The only thing I worry about in a lot of cases is when we start talking about games like this, I'm like... Because I spoke to you before how we tried to play Necromunda Hired Gun.
Yeah.
And whilst that game has had a console release, the version on PC, I swear, when I hook up my control pad, it feels terrible. Yeah. Like that was totally a game that needed to be mouse and keyboard. So I was just curious, because I was like, if I'm going to take a go on it on Steam Deck, am I going to want to play it with the track pads of the Steam controller, or am I going to want to... Or could I just, sit on my couch and PlayStation it?
I get a feeling it would work quite fine. Sure. I get a feeling that it would work. I think it'd work okay, because it's not exactly a complicated set of controls.
Sure.
It is available on Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, or Nintendo Switch.
Oh, cool.
Released 3rd of October 2018, and the Switch was 2019.
I'll have to give it a go. As I say, you picked it up for me, so I'll have to give it a go.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I have to say, I'm very pleased with the with our enjoyment so far. Although I'm now looking at some of the reviews people give to it, and some of the reviews aren't very kind to it.
Oh.
Which is a bit shocking.
Don't read too much, because you don't want to ruin it for yourself, just in case.
Yeah. So yeah. Are you up to this bit? Yes, I am. Well, great. You're going to really enjoy the last part of this game. You're going to hate the last part. Oh, good. So, but yeah, I thought it was quite neat.
Cool.
Right.
I have to check it out.
We've actually talked about some games in Skaz.
Woo! Did it. First try.
We did. So I think, unless you've got anything else you want to bring up, Skaz, I think it's a bit of time.
Yes, me done, son.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, buddy, for joining us today. You can join us on our next podcast on May the 6th at 9:30, 20 plus 1 hour GMT. You can join us on our games night, which is this Wednesday on the 26th of April. You can join me on twitch.tv/stuffagram.
And me at twitch.tv/Skazius, SK4ZZI0US. It really tripped me out last time when you were trying to say my lines.
Yeah. You can check out our website, randnerds.co.uk. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/randnerds, and twitch.tv/randnerds is the Twitch channel. So until then, thank you for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time. From me, the Suffolk Ram, goodbye.
See you guys.
Nailed it.
First try.